Welcome to the Otherworlds GG Community Cast. This is episode number 61. I am Table for Two, and I'm here with Melify and Alien Pickle. How's it going, guys?
Good. This is Melify. I am doing great. How about you, Jim?
No complaints yet, but we just started, so give me a minute.
Today we're going to be talking a little bit about game difficulty. It's funny because I actually posted a meme not too long ago about, there's some guy on TikTok that did a thing that was like, gaming in your 30s, and it's just like, your eyesight gets worse, new games suck, you buy games that you can't play, or you're too tired to play games. It's like the ever-evolving, door of gaming problems, right? But I do think that there is an argument to be made that as we've gone on, the types of games that we have today are maybe challenging in different ways than before, or maybe in some cases just not challenging at all. That could be due to any number of things. I think there's also that whole, like, maybe boomer comment of saying, like, well, back in my day. But, you know, it's funny, as I've gotten older, one of the things that I've noticed, though, is, like, games that I used to find, like, challenging but could make it through are a little bit harder for me today, whether it's due to reaction time or whatever you want to call it. Like, I remember growing up as a kid, I fully beat, you know, Mario Brothers 2 and Mario Brothers 3 and, the great joy and celebration of that. I try and play some of those things today, and I'm just like, ooh, these are, and these are not the games that I remember. Or just, you know, I maybe I'm not playing them as frequently, or I'm not in it as much. But you know, you play something like Star Wars Squadrons today, and I challenge the people playing Star Wars Squadrons today to go back and play TIE Fighter.
Yeah, they'll cry. You'll be like,
what I mean,
but it's so hard.
Yeah, you know, because Squadrons really holds your hand, like, comparatively from a narrative-driven standpoint. But, you know,
Squadrons isn't any kind of a puzzle thing, right? Like, the old TIE Fighter game was kind of puzzly in that I have to figure out what order to do things and where my attention needs to be focused in this mission, and I'll fail it and fail it and fail it until I figure that out.
Yeah, sometimes even though your primary objective is X, you need to do the secondary first, you know, in order to pass the mission. Yeah, there's very much a pattern to try and figure out on some of those missions. The thing about Squadrons is like, literally the game will pause to wait for you to get caught up. And I'm just like, what? I think the example that I love to use frequently is playing X-Wing Alliance. There's a mission which you have to hyperspace to different points in the mission. And I accidentally hyperspaced to the first point rather than to the third point, and I had to get caught up. But, like, they were already doing things without me. Like, triggers were still being triggered without me while they were in the third room or the third hyperspace point. Whereas, like, in Squadrons, for example, like, if you're not where they are, like, are close enough to where the ships are, they wait for you until you get caught up to them, and then the animation continues.
Yeah, it's like, defend this transport. Okay, well, hold on a minute. I'll just park here, and I'm going to go make a sandwich, and then you come back. And then when you get within, like, 100 units of the thing, then it's like, oh, they've launched fighters. Right, because they were waiting on me to be present.
It's the weirdest thing, and I don't understand it. I think in terms of Star Wars, and we're talking a lot about Star Wars games, I think in terms of Star Wars games, the best modern Star Wars game that I think has done this well has been Fallen Order. Jedi Fallen Order first of all, it's like a Souls game in a Star Wars universe. But one of the things that I like about it is that they have the story mode difficulty, where you are playing through it for the story rather than the challenge. And then they have their challenge difficulties that make it harder and harder for you to play. I like games that do that. Give me choice on how much pain I am willing to handle.
Can you imagine Dark Souls?
Yeah,
Dark Souls in walking simulator mode. It's just like, oh, you broke your ankle. Dead. Your shoelace was loose. Dead.
Right.
Dark Souls, the walking simulator.
Right. Well, I think that goes to a lot of, you know, and I think there's also the challenge of game preference too. You know, like when I was younger, I definitely played more console games, so I was more in the console challenge mindset, as where when I got older, I got more into the PC games and the PC world of playing games. Now, sometimes I play PC games with a controller. That's not to say that I, you know, don't use controllers. What that is to say, though, is like, for example, when I started playing PC ports of, say, God of War, and I started playing through God of War on the PC, I found myself being challenged by even the normal difficulty of the game mechanics, because I'm not used to those kinds of game mechanics, because it's not the kind of game I normally play. And so I found the game difficult and even challenging at times because I'm not used to that style of gameplay. And I find a lot of games that have traditionally been on console that get ported to PC like that. And I'm surprised by that. I wonder if you guys struggle with that yourself, or if you've seen similar things in your realm of playing.
Let's see. So for me, at one point in my life, before I had kids and a, you know, busy life, I played games on the hardest difficulty, particularly when achievements became a thing, because it was very common to have, you know, a beat the game achievement for each difficulty level. And I wanted that, you know, best achievement. So I remember Call of Duty 2 on the Xbox 360 was such a slog on veteran or whatever the difficulty was, because the Germans could snipe you from across the map with like a pistol and headshot you and kill you. And so it was painful at times, especially Call of Duty, because the game, like we were talking about, the game doesn't trigger until you move things forward. So if you just bunker down and hide, they'll just keep spawning more enemies. It's not until you reach a certain point on the map that it'll stop spawning guys. So you can really, you know, shoot yourself in the foot if you hide and use up all your ammo. But, you know, now I will play story difficulty and not feel bad about it if it's a game that I'm not particularly interested in. I did that with Fallen Order, in fact. And I, you know, the combat was fine. I did crank up the difficulty, I think, to normal after playing it a little bit on story, because it was too easy. It was just silly for me. But I agree. Like, I think story difficulty is really, really nice.
Yeah, and that's, I think that the gaming difficulty bar changes with age, not because a game just inherently becomes harder because you're older, but your time investment's different, right? And so your time investment in a game, it's kind of like, you go right now and try and play original Unreal Tournament online with those guys that have been playing for the last 30 years, and you tell me how well you're gonna do. I mean, like, those guys haven't stopped playing. You know, they've never stopped playing. Right. And so I think about that at times too, because, you know, you have people that have been playing the same game for so long that they've gotten really good at it. But there's also just that element of, what's your time investment? I've only got so much time to invest in doing a thing.
Well, like any multiplayer shooter, it's have I memorized the maps?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you know where the weapons spawn, if you know where the kind of secret nooks and crannies are, and the back path to get around something, then you have an advantage. And if you're a newbie, you know, good luck picking right. that stuff up.
Right. No, 100%. I agree. So how's it been for you guys though, as you've matured in your gaming experience, like, you mentioned that you play story mode now, but I mean, is that because you don't, your preferences has changed, or if you had the time, would you like to try games in harder mode, or is just like, you've gotten to a point now where you'd rather casually enjoy a game rather than get into it hardcore, if that makes any sense?
At least for me, I feel like I don't have the patience to figure out some fiddly little detail with the game. I don't want to deal with it. Like, I don't have the patience. So I would rather play on an easier difficulty and get through the game, get the story, experience the game, and then move on to the next game, because I have a backlog of, you know, 4,000 games that I'm
sure
I'm trying to play at some point. So there's zero benefit to me of, like, really, really digging in and trying really hard to master one game, because I'm going to move on to the next thing as soon as I beat it. And there's a few exceptions, certainly, but like, I'm playing King Arthur right now, which is the Neosoft game. It's a strategy role-playing game. And I did crank it up in difficulty because I found it too easy. And it's still too easy, frankly. But I'm a min-maxer, right? Like, one of the skills that I realized you can get on a piece of armor, because it's like Diablo, right? Your characters get randomly generated loot. excuse me. One of the skills lets your archer's arrows ricochet and hit a second target for 50% damage. Well, that bonus stacks if you get it on multiple pieces of armor. So I have an archer who takes out four people every time she fires the bow. Well, there's only 12 enemies, maybe 20 at most, in an encounter. So if every turn she's taking out four and my main guy is sprinting across the map and basically knocking people down and stabbing them to death, like, I can clear half of the level in no time flat because I've, you know, min-maxed it to the point where it's just kind of silly. And so the difficulty there is less than I'd like. I'd like it to be a little more challenging, frankly.
Right, sure. 100%. What about
but
you,
I like
Jim?
The game, so.
Interesting, right? Because as games have turned more narrative-based, I am kind of, like, interested in, like, just show me the narrative, let's go. But then if the game is like, not engaging, as far as I have to think about what I'm doing, or, you know, like, is there any risk here? Can, you know, then I'm kind of like not invested in the game because it doesn't demand anything of me. Right. So, like, if you made a game where you have to just, like, walk 100 miles in a straight line, like Desert Bus, right? Like, okay, I'm not playing that because there's nothing going on here that demands anything. I could watch a movie at that point. So I don't know, man. It's like, it just depends entirely on what the game is presenting, because there are some games that I play that, like, Warframe is a good example, where you get doses of story stuff, but in between that, it's all, you know, like, grind whatever the mission content is, right? So I'm playing it more for the enjoyment of interacting with the game than the story. But then when the story things do drop, then my focus shifts to that. So, you know, and it unfortunately they have like a long development cycle to put content like that in. But, you know, it's the, I don't know, Warframe's like a good but bad example of, but it's a game that's doing both things. So they have to have engaging systems that are rewarding to just interact with, regardless of there being any narrative at all. It's just fun to play the game, right? So, like, games like Call of Duty, where you just join a match and you're fighting people, and, you know, there in the old days there was no advancement, right? Like Quake multiplayer, it's like you got better. But it's not like, oh, I leveled up my gear, or I've unlocked another gun, or whatever, because I put the time into, you know. So at that point, it was just my skills versus your skills, you know, and am I enjoying just the contest of the game? And then they decided, like, okay, well, we have to put a progression system in so that people feel this sense of progression. And I feel like sometimes that's good, but sometimes that's detriment as well.
Yeah, I think
player base, right? Like, you want those players that you have to show up every day so that other people have somebody to play with. So you got to put something in there that is like, you better be here every day.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point that you've made, too, because, like you said, there used to be a time where, let's say, you played Unreal Tournament, everybody's pretty much evenly matched, and it was really, you know, kind of what guns are you good at or what weapons are you good at kind of determines, you know, it's really that raw skill versus raw skill. And, you know, I think some of the early Call of Duty stuff where it became like a class-based thing. So you had, like, your scout, you had your, you know, which was usually, like, maybe your sniper even. You know, you had your rifleman, you had your, you know, your engineer, right? And they're all class-based, and then you would deal with that. So it was like, it was very strict. And then things kind of got more into a progression system within a class. That's something that I like. So it's just like, here's my engineering class where I can progress this engineer and unlock different weapons or different things that are kind of exclusive to that engineer, though.
Like Battlefield 3 was...
Battlefield 3 is a perfect example. And 4, I think, still kept with it, too. But definitely 3 was such a huge example of, like, I'm grinding this class because I really like this class and I can do certain things with it. And, but, like, when it became kind of a just, like, you know, when they started adding in the seasons stuff into games, I think that sometimes that's good and bad because it forces you to play in a lot of ways. I think Halo's trying to change the trend, but in a lot of ways it forces you to play that season in order to unlock certain things. Most of the time it's cosmetic. I think some games, they let you unlock other weapons through seasons, or at least they give you money to go and unlock other game, like other weapons through some of their, like, you know, weapon system, whatever crap, you get blueprints or blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think because then I feel like that starts turning into a monetization scheme, right? Like, how can we monetize this to keep, you know, people playing where they buy a season, for example, they purchase into the season so that way they can go and then grind it to unlock these things. But in a lot of cases, in a lot of games, if the season's over, you lose access to that content. Some games have changed that a little bit. Some games, you know, you can go back and still grind through old season stuff. I think Halo, as I mentioned, lets you do that. At least the Master Chief Collection lets you do that for sure, which I really applauded them for. But I think that kind of changes. It's to keep people in your game, right? It's this mechanism to keep people coming back to your game because it's a game as a service. So they have to try and find ways of keeping people in their game. And I kind of hate that.
When they're tracking engagement as like a success stat for their business, then maybe that's a, you know, it used to just be, well, how many copies did we sell?
Right.
And 6 months later, how many people are still playing it?
Right.
And now it's like, well, now we need to like analyze down to like the day and the time zone. Like, do we maintain X amount of player base? Because most of the games are, you know, it's like Fortnite, right? Like, well, if there ain't nobody to play with, then you're not playing it. So we have to keep the max. And then whenever you look into like the skill-based matchmaking, then it's not just are there sufficient players, but are there sufficient players that are equivalent to your matchmaking tier so that you will have people to play with, right? Because like MechWarrior Online, at one point they had a pretty severe population drop, and there was like, the only people that were playing were the salty old veterans. And then whenever you get in, if you're not a top tier player, you're going to have a bad time because, you know, you're just the first person dead in every match because you're playing against people that are like professionally competitive level of that game.
See, and this is where
matchmaking's broke.
Right, and this is where I feel like games like that really need to invest in single player options, where it's like, it's still the same kind of like matchmaking stuff, but it's with NPCs instead. To let people learn and grow, and then, like, you know, get more and interesting and challenging NPCs to play with.
Yeah, that was personally, something for me, like the MechWarrior thing that we've been doing is perfect because we are all various skill levels of playing MechWarrior.
Right.
But we can turn up the mission and then support each other in a cooperative way so we get through it. But it's a thing of like online against other players, you don't have that option. So I feel like cooperative play against AI is probably the target that people should be looking to do.
Right. And I think in a lot of ways, games, you know, developers need to embrace that a little bit more, because it gives people options for choice, which is why I was glad, for all of its faults, I think Squadrons hit a decent point where they had, you can do custom, like, co-op versus AI matches now.
Yeah, now, but not at launch when right, they needed it.
Well, that's exactly when they needed it.
Right, because they bled players really fast. Because the Squadrons turned into exactly that Mech Warrior scenario, right? Like, right. The only people playing Squadrons right now
are the
now
salty vets.
Smoke you.
Yeah, it's yep. The salty vets. Yeah, and I think that's a shame. I mean, I think there was some merit to Squadrons, but their two online game modes only, I think, is really a detriment to them. I think they should have, you know, come up with a few more options, or at least a few more maps, or a few more, like, variations,
you know, what
on their game modes.
What would have made that game great is if it had a mission creator that was open to the people, and it was like X-Wing Alliance. Right. Mm-hmm, where it's like, I'm going to make a quick mission. I'm going to put two Star Destroyers, and the target is that station that we have to kill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to turn the enemy like, OK, there's going to be four groups of four that come at us. Right. And, you know, but and I can pick what they're going to be. Right. And then I stick that mission out there in the world for people. And you put like a thumbs up, thumbs down rating, right? Mm-hmm. And then the missions that are actually good bubble to the top. And there's always something player created content that's going on. If they'd give the players the tools like that, even like the old school X-Wing versus TIE editor, right? Mm-hmm. That let you say, okay, at 4 minutes, this ship arrives and it has these waypoints that it's going to go to. And it's just going to do what it does as it travels, you know, like if it's set to engage enemy fighters, it will do so with its AI, you know. And then you just say, OK, well, like at 8 minutes, it leaves. Right. So you set trigger things like that. If they'd have put a simple editor in that I could actually just make missions like that, then I could make a lot of stuff. And you could have like people, it doesn't have to be really complicated, right? It could have been fairly simple to do. And then that game would have a life ongoing, because like whenever we multiplayered through the old X-Wing versus TIE Fighter stuff, every one of those missions would have been makeable in that, because they didn't do any super freaky custom stuff. It was just a mission like, get in there in your A-wings, scan all the cargo containers, mission success at 100%, right? Survive it. Okay, cool. Then I could have made that. Everything that happened in XVT could have been made in Squadrons if they'd have gave me a simple editor, and people would be cranking out content for that thing, and it would still be an alive game to me.
Right. Yeah, and I think that just goes back to like the challenge of video games. Like, there's just not, you know, enough to give people the options. I mean, I understand that they're trying to keep people in games longer because it's games as a service and that whole thing. And I get that, but what kept people playing games before though? Was communities, right? Communities really drove a game. And if a game was compelling enough, you had mods for a game, you had total conversion mods for a game. I mean, look at what spawned from just Half-Life and the Quake engine back in the day. I mean, you know, I know it's not necessarily directly related to game difficulty, but people were allowed to make their own fun with the games that they bought. And then increase in sales happened for things like Team Fortress 2 and these other things, because people were wanting to get Half-Life so that way they could play these mods, right?
Yeah, you know, an interesting thing happened with Mario Maker, right? Because people started making stuff in there that was like asshole Mario. Right?
So, yes, yeah, remember, yeah, very much so.
Remember
yeah.
that old meme?
I love the, side note, I love the who's the painter guy? who's that famous like happy little bush painter guy? Bob Ross. There's a funny Bob Ross parody video someone made of him being a Bob Ross doing Mario Maker. It is hysterical. If you guys get a chance, go YouTube Bob Ross Mario Maker. It is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. But anyway, continue with your Mario Maker.
Okay, so the content that got made for that, if you looked at it, right, the people that were showing videos and like all the creator content was all the like salty vet people, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, look how incredibly obnoxious this level is, and I beat it anyway, right?
Right.
So it became like Mario Souls. Right. It's just like this game is so obnoxious. And that would have put me off the game because it's like, well, I have enough fun just playing Super Mario World as it was. And I really don't need to like drag myself through broken glass on every level because people made like these crazy ass puzzle things that are just abusive. Right. But that's the only content that you saw. What should have happened in that, and I think that it probably did, but the stuff that gets featured is the extreme, right? Mm-hmm. But it would also be like, well, what about content for people that aren't really great at Mario, mm-hmm. but we can just make Mario levels that are at our skill level endlessly, right? So did anybody like do like a classic difficulty of Mario stuff? Did anybody make like an easier Mario for people that want to play Mario but can't even play like the regular Mario game?
I mean, I'm sure they did.
It got done.
Yeah.
But you don't see it featured, so it doesn't exist. Right. It, especially in a sales kind of way. Like, it's not going to draw people in like, oh, there are actually like accessible to any skill level content in this game that got made by people. Although I'm sure because people are making stuff and there are people of all skill levels that people that are good at making stuff might actually make things for lesser skilled players or people that want a more chill experience in it. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, like bleed you to death difficulty in mm-hmm. order to be cool. You could still do cool things, you know, but I just feel like that game in particular is sort of an example of like the misperception of what happens when you give player created content. Is that players will always make the super extreme stuff that actually pushes people away. So maybe that's why developers don't actually put it in, because it's like, well, that's such a like 0.01% of our player base. It wouldn't be worth the dev time to make it because nobody would make anything except for other people that are as salty vet as themselves.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the Mario Maker stuff with like those, you know, you called it Mario Souls, which I think is appropriate. But like, you know, I think the Mario Maker stuff was really because if you look online, you've got like the speedrunners, you've got all these people that are like trying to do these things. It became kind of like almost like an e-sport, really, to try and get through some of these crazy levels, like some of these crazy designs, and it almost became like a puzzle in and of itself, or a new kind of Mario. And for some people, I think that that's just, it's its own thing in a good way. I just think that there's content out there that's just, you know, it's just not for me, you know, and I think that's appropriate for most people. There's just gaming content that's for most. And I think that was really going to be my next question for you, both of you guys, which is like, as you've matured in your gaming, has your gaming taste shifted to different types of games? Like, you know, did you used to really like playing these X kind of games, and now you're more into like these kinds of games over here? Now that you're older, is there like a preference that you prefer more now that you're older than when you were younger?
I think for me, so games, the content focus of games has changed, I think, a lot as the capability of the presentation has changed. So like back in the 90s, right, we had Fallout, mm-hmm. Fallout 1, Fallout 2, legendary games. And then we got into Fallout 3 and 4, which turned into like this 3D, you know, more first person shooter perspective thing. and we lost some stuff, right? But then we also gained some things. Like in Fallout 4, you can build your own settlements and stuff, and
right,
it's got
right,
you know, it's got some Sims kind of gameplay that's going on in there. Not perfect, but it's there.
Right, and now you've got Fallout Online, and you know, or 76 basically, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of did some things, but a lot of dev time goes into having the presentation be like tolerable, I guess, you know, where it doesn't like make you eject out of the game like, oh, this looks ridiculous, right? And back in the old school days, the game just was going to look like a game, right? And so more focus went into the complexity of the systems that were going on.
So it
had to be, you know, the focus was on the emergent gameplay itself, and not so much like, well, we have to limit what we can do because, well, we can't do that because then we'd have to actually figure out how to show it on the screen kind of thing. Dwarf Fortress, right? So you watch all the Dwarf Fortress stories of like, oh, well, I took in a rabbit, but it happened to be a vampire rabbit. And then it like infected all the people. And then the people started like becoming cannibals and, you know, the like these crazy ass like emergent gameplay things that happen in that game because it's just text. So it can. But if they had to actually figure out like, well, we have to 3D model all this stuff, right? And well, do we have a vampire rabbit model? No, we'd have to make it. Well, how many gigs of space does that add to the install? Right. So games, because the visual presentation has become the primary focus of a lot of things, then I feel like it has actually limited severely what can go on under the surface of it. So
yeah, and that's an interesting point that you make. I remember on a previous podcast that you and I used to co-host, you know, there used to be this whole notion of the in the space gaming world, the rise of space to planet interaction, right? Like where you could fly from space and enter the atmosphere, and now you're flying down to the planet. Like, look at this tech. Look how cool this is. Look, blah blah blah. You know, because for the longest time, I mean, that was kind of a crazy concept, is like, can I actually fly from the surface of this planet up into outer space seamlessly? And, you know, there's definitely a lot of games that are doing that now. There's more and more sci-fi games that's actually a piece of tech that can be done. But for the longest time, you couldn't. And I think what's interesting about that too is like, I look at something like, and I reference this one a lot because I think it was just a game that was ahead of its time, but you look at Star Wars Galaxies in its many iterations. I think, you know, it's interesting. It's, you want to talk about game difficulty, that game is a whole show on its own on how it went from this super complex game, like, you know, because, you know, they didn't have the graphical capacity. So they made the game really complex and deep and interesting. And then they watered the game down into character classes, you know, from 36 unique professions to 9 character classes. But in terms of other game mechanics, though, they didn't do the seamless transition from space to planet, but they eventually allowed players to fly their ships in Atmo. And then if you'd fly up high enough, you'd transition into the space stuff. And then if you flew close enough to a planet, it would do an instance change into the planet and it would load you in. Much like how Empyrean does it now. I think Empyrean is an interesting case of not trying to overly complex the size of their game with seamless transitions while keeping complex, smooth gameplay, if that makes any sense. Because it has a lot of really unique and interesting deep systems of complexity and challenges, because, you know, it's a survival crafting game, but it's also got a built-in economy system and a mission system and NPCs, and it does a whole galaxy of planets and systems, and right, you know, like, so it's but in order to do that, it instances every single zone. So, you know, when you're on a planet, you fly up high enough and it'll load you into a new instance where you're in the space instance around the planet. But if you want to go to a different planet in that system, you know, it loads you into a new instance of the space around the other planet in that system. It does it very quickly, and it does it in a way that seems seamless, and they do some animation trickery to hide the loading, right? So, like, you're going through hyperspace, that's the loading screen, and, you know, it gets you there. So it kind of, you know, it keeps the game complex enough without having to have so much technology to do it, if that makes any sense. But there's something to be said, though. So I've asked you guys questions. I mean, for me, like, I think my gaming tastes have definitely changed over the years. I definitely, you know, growing up, I was definitely more into the 2D and 3D platformers, right? Because that was the common thing on the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, N64. You know, the action RPGs like, you know, Legend of Zelda, you know, those kinds of things. You know, my gaming tastes matured and differed as I got more into the PC world. And so,
Zelda's an interesting thing, because Zelda actually did the opposite. Back when Zelda was just flat 2D Nintendo thing, it was very simple. It did one thing, right? Yeah, you move down, left, right, and you hit a button for the sword. So then you come up to 3D and you have Breath of the Wild, which is like Zelda Skyrim edition. And that actually got more intense because, right. So, yeah.
Yeah, because now you're able to, like, climb up walls, you got the glider, you have, you know, your weapon system, you have your food crafting, you have your clothes that change your stats, because if you go into colder areas, you need warmer clothes, and vice versa. If you're in hotter areas, you want lighter clothes. Like, they've added a whole system of mechanics to those games that have definitely made it more challenging and interesting. And I think if done well, not to add things just because you want things to be complex, but add things that make the gameplay interesting and just challenging enough is what I strive for. That's what I look for in a game, is mechanics that are just challenging enough. Like, for example, the new Halo Infinite. Some people are criticizing this because they're like, well, it's not my Halo. I was like, I don't know. I thought the story was still on par with, like, the continuing lore of the existing games, but they added in this new gameplay mechanic of the grappling hook. And I think the grappling hook changed my mind on how I see combat, because now I'm using it to pull myself closer to enemies for harder punches, or I'm using it to pull things to me that I can then throw at enemies. And it added a new layer of gameplay rather than run and shoot a thing or throw a grenade, right? So I think it added, for the longest time, when I was playing it early on in the first several hours of the game, I would forget frequently that I had this thing, the grapple, right? Like, they kind of tutorialize you, and then, like, you're so used to, and you're like, okay, I've got a grappling hook, but you're so used to playing Halo where it's like run, gun, throw grenade, you know, that you forget about this new mechanic, even though they kind of tutorialize you a little bit in the beginning that you have it. It wasn't until I was, like, further into the open world that I started being like, oh, right, I've got this grappling hook thing, I should start using this more. And then, like, the more I used it, the more I saw how I could use it in boss fights. I saw that because, you know, Chief has kind of, like, a one-speed, like, movement style. I think they've, like, added in sprint now. But, like, he can only go so fast. Like, he's a big walking brick, you know? It's kind of like, you know, he's a walking tank is essentially how I've viewed him in most scenarios. But this grappling hook allows you to travel or move quickly in a room. You know, you grab a wall and it pulls you across the room really fast. Or, yeah.
Well, that was an interesting thing in, like, was it Halo 3 that they finally added sprinting?
No, it was Halo.
Pick up a module.
It was Halo Reach. Halo 3 was still one speed Chief. So 1 through 3 was one speed Chief. And then Halo Reach added in the modules where you can get, like, the jetpack module or, like, the shield module or the sprinting module or whatever it was. And then it wasn't until, I think, Halo 4 and 5 where it was, like sprinting was just a casual norm that you could do. Which I find funny, you know, I mean, it's just so funny you're this cyborg, but you can only go one speed. You know, there is no, I can't run and charge. I always found that funny about, you know, the first few Halo games. But,
So something that struck me as we were talking about games and their evolution, if you think back to the controller and how many more buttons and sticks and inputs we have on a standard controller, right? If I sat down to play Mario on the NES, I had two buttons and the D-pad.
Yep.
And that was the barrier to entry, was could I figure out how to maneuver my guy with those buttons? Fast forward to today, if I pick up a controller, I have to know where A, B, X, Y are, R1, L1, L, you know, R2, L2, L3, R3, both sticks, the D-pad. It's a lot. And so that has raised, I feel like, the sort of minimum barrier to entry. To just sit down and play a game, you have to have a certain amount of, like, understanding of the controller. And if you're playing on PC, it's not that much different, right? Because you have to know the keyboard and the mouse and how to maneuver those.
I think you've hit on something really interesting, because I was watching something not too long ago about gaming language, like the language of a gamer. There's an inherent thing that if you've been playing video games long enough, you have an understanding inherently at this point how the controller works.
Mega Man.
Right.
You might want to jump here.
Right. Remember that?
Yeah. From a new person's perspective, though, getting into games, it could probably be overwhelming because you have a lot of buttons. Like, I remember, you know, the first video game console that I owned, not the first one I played on, but the first one I owned was a Super Nintendo. And I remember, you know, as a young man, like, you know, having to remember where A, B, and X, Y are. You know, my buddy would be like, oh, speaking of Mega Man, we played Mega Man X. It was like, oh, hit this. And I was like, well, where is that? And you're like looking down at the controller to hit the right button. Now it's all muscle memory, right? Like, you know, you get to a point where you're just like, you pick up a controller, it's almost inherently muscle memory. It could be a new controller and you're like, well, the mappings are probably going to be similar because video games are a language, right? You understand the language of gaming. And if you don't, and if it's not the same, because obviously Nintendo is the backwards one of the mix, right? So they always put, like, A is the activation thing, and it's on the right side of the controller rather than, you know, on the bottom. But anyway, you know what I'm saying. But, because video games are a language, you get me. But I think you've hit on an interesting point, though, Melified. As time has gone on, you know, we think about the complexity of gamings and games that are, you know, difficulty in gamings. Gaming, you know, the gaming world. I mean, I think, you know, inherently the controllers have gotten definitely more complex. The game design has definitely gotten more complex. But I think it's funny how, in a lot of ways, we find it soothing when we sometimes find, like, that retro style looking new game that we can play through.
Well, I just like games that actually respect convention. Like, the A button is jump. Always. Like, if you put jump on, like, push up instead, or, you know, because, I don't know, just, and I think it's actually Japanese games that do anti-conventional things sometimes that freak me out. But, you know, it's like, okay, are the triggers attack, or is it X and Y button is, like, light and heavy attack? And you just figure out which like design language the game is using, and then you just kind of expect it, right? And Halo, I think, was instrumental in developing FPS design language, because Halo did it, then Call of Duty did it, and now I can pick up any FPS and figure the buttons out in about 2 seconds. But if you put jump on Y or something, then I'm gonna just not be good at it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, here's my melee, here's my melee, here's my reload, here's my switch weapon, got it, let's go. You know, just like, yeah.
Well, or RTSs are another great example, because there was the Westwood style and there was the Blizzard style in the early days.
Yes, and
left click
to move, right click to move, and man, was that hard to switch back and forth, to the point where the RTSs at some point just gave you both options as a setting in the menu, because people were used to it one way or the other. But yeah, like those things are barriers to actually enjoying the game. And I think I remember the input method being a big deal for certain games. Descent, the original Descent, you wanted a special joystick that had the extra controls so you could do the vertical strafe maneuver as well as the pitch and yaw, right? Because you were a spaceship, so you could go straight up, straight down, or you could pitch your nose up or down. And you could strafe left, strafe right, move forward, move back, but you could also roll and yaw your ship. And so all those, in certain scenarios, if you got really good, you could, like, circle strafe would be the equivalent in an FPS, where you could spin around while keeping somebody in your crosshairs as you were moving. And so that became part of the difficulty, was mastering the controls. And we have a few games that troll you intentionally with bad controls. Octodad being one, I Am Bread is another that I can think of, where the controls are difficult because that's sort of the game, right? That, like, that challenge of doing stuff, and the humor, especially in Octodad, of making a mistake and you, like, knock, you know, the coffee cups off the table and they go flying and smash into the wall and stuff. But that, the difficulty isn't even necessarily the game, but it's your interface to the game that makes it hard. And I think that's an aspect of this that is interesting.
Yeah, well, there have been some games where, like, you can put, like, a debuff on another player that inverts their controls or something, and it's just like, oof, man, that is hateful.
Yeah, you flip up, down, and left and right. That's hard.
Yeah, there's the, I think Sea of Thieves has an interesting thing about that, too, with, like, some of their magic cannonballs.
One of the cannonballs, yeah.
But
my wife, like, when we were first dating and she wanted to play WoW because it was a game that I worked on, and, like, for her, just mastering the concept of WASD and the mouse at the same time took a while for her to, like, get the hang of it and get good at it. And now she's fine. She sits down, she snipes people in Fortnite or whatever, and has a grand old time, but she can't use a controller at all. Like, she doesn't want to play anything with a controller because she's just not used to it.
Congratulations. And you've turned your wife into a PC snob.
I know. I have the full on PC master race going at my house, believe me. So, you know, I just find it very interesting how the whatever's between you and the game, you know, makes a difference, and in the difficulty. And I think about the games that I really like to play, going back to your earlier question, and has my gaming taste changed? I am less willing to commit to a fast-paced 90s style FPS game because I'm not very good at them, because I don't have the reflexes anymore, I feel like, as I've gotten older. And I have always enjoyed turn-based strategy, but now, like, I really like turn-based strategy because it's my pace. If I need to get up and, you know, deal with the kids, I need to go get a phone call, I you know, something pops into my inbox and I need to go respond to a message, I don't have to worry about the game. The game is there waiting for me when I'm ready, not, you know, a multiplayer shooter where it's like, oh, I have to finish this round before I can, you know, deal with real life.
No, that's definitely good. I definitely feel that. I think for me, the gaming difficulty these days has become choice of game, because I've got so many to play. It becomes difficult to find something just to sit down and enjoy because there's so much. But, you know, there's definitely been a few where I just, you know, make up my mind where I'm going to just sit down and play through this. I think, you know, that was, like, what I did with Mass Effect Andromeda. You know, I picked that up after, you know, they finally patched that thing so it wasn't so goofy. And, you know, it was an okay game. You know, the story was eh. The mechanics I enjoyed, I mean, you know, it wasn't a terrible game by any stretch of the imagination, but it was nice to actually sit down and play through it. I'm struggling to find the time to actually sit down and finish through God of War, Cyberpunk, name one, Death Stranding that I've been trying to play through. Like those are the three that come to mind that I've been trying to just sit down, focus on, and blast through. But
well, it's funny you say that because we were talking online and you were asking about playing something on our next community night, and I was like, I am trying to finish King Arthur so I can then play, you know, Warhammer Chaosbane. And you're like, well, I'm not talking about today. I'm talking about Thursday. I'm like, yes, I know, but I need to finish one. And then I really want to play the next one. And like, I tend to play one game at a time now, because if I don't, I will never go back and I will never finish the game. And so I'm trying to train myself to like play a game start to finish, or until I get bored of it. Right. If I'm just not feeling it, like, that's okay. I'll put it down and go to something else. But I want to make that a conscious choice, not, oh, look, shiny. Oh, squirrel. Oh, wait, you know, and, you know, community nights is certainly a fair exception. I don't mean to suggest I'm not going to do other multiplayer games or co-op games, but, I'm trying to have one true love at a time in terms of games, for exactly what you're describing. And sometimes it's hard. Like, I got to a point in Cyberpunk where I'm like, okay, I'm at the last story mission, you know, that I can do all my side missions on, right? The game even warns you. It throws up a big thing. It's like, if you want to do anything else, you better go do it now before you do this mission. And I had probably 30 fixer side missions to do, because I kind of just mainlined the story. And I wanted to go do them because they were fun and interesting. But holy smokes, doing them all back to back like that was not fun. It was a bit of a slog.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's a reason that Skyrim remains in the top of the charts, because that's like a literally choose your own adventure kind of thing. It's like, okay, I've got these quests, and then you go somewhere and you find out like, ooh, wait, that's really difficult, right? Like I had fun getting here and I'm having a chill mood of exploring and whatever. And then I get to this content that's like, okay, now you're in the funnel, right? So when you go in here, now you're in a thing that's a completely different difficulty range than what you were doing. And it's like non-casual, like you better bring your A game into this castle, because they're going to whip your ass. And then it's like, well, okay, I went in, I died. I tried it again, I died. And it's like, do I want this frustration right now, or can I just come back to this later? Because, you know, I was just, my mood's not here for the frustration, right? And it gives me the option to just walk away and go do something else, but within the same game, rather than, oh, I've hit the brick wall in this game, and if I want to just do something else, I switch games.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Yeah, I think, you know, the other thing too is there's just too many games I want to play in general. And then all of a sudden I also get stuck back into playing Eve again. I think that's my other problem, if you will.
Well, it's not a problem if you're enjoying it, but you're
sure.
Not.
Sure, you
know, getting to the other things, yeah.
Right? But
well, Eve is also that low key, like I can just like chill out and explore and do like non intense things. But if I want to do something intense, I have the option to put a little effort in to go over there and do it.
Right. I mean, that's the interesting thing about MMOs is they're designed, or they're mostly supposed to be designed to give you a variety of gameplay styles that you can enjoy. At least the good ones are. I think Eve certainly falls into that realm. I personally, you know, I'm wanting to try and get, you know, more into some of these other games that I have, like, you know, Star Wars: The Old Republic has done a huge job on focusing on narrative driven gameplay and storytelling over the MMO portion of things. While you can still co-op and do things with other players, they're really heavily focusing on the story missions that you can go and do. And I really appreciate that about it. I think it's kind of turned into, you know, more of a Fallout 76 kind of scenario where, like, you're really focused on yourself, but there's other players around to do stuff with if you want to do that, which I appreciate that. I like that about some of these new modern spins on the MMO, right? They're they're more smaller instance based like sessions where there's other players around to do stuff with if you want to. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that those open world gameplay options that gives you more interesting things, you know, like little like world events that you can go and do. I think Guild Wars 2 is a really good example of this as well. I really like Guild Wars 2 from an MMO perspective. And I think that's just a genre that I've shifted to more over the time is like I really love exploring worlds. I really love exploring new and interesting places and their story and their history and that kind of stuff. You know, single player games are great because they tell a one-off story and then you can be like, well, that was fun. It's like, you know, it's almost like that, you know, I think of MMOs as like that book author that maybe has written too many books in a series. They're just like, you keep coming back for more and it's like, oh, they're still writing stories for this. But, you know, some of these single player, you know, one-off games, I really do enjoy. I wish I just could discipline myself to put the time into it as well as enjoy my longer form games, I guess, that's the gaming challenge that I find is that my taste in games hasn't really changed. I still enjoy a good platformer if a good one comes out, right? Like for example, Super Lucky's Tale. I loved Super Lucky's Tale. I thought Super Lucky's Tale was a great game. It was definitely in that, like Mario 64 style of platformer, right? You know, it's that 3D puzzler kind of platformy game that I absolutely, I loved it. And I was thankful for Game Pass for it, to be able to play that. But yeah, I think that's really my challenge now is just finding the time to enjoy the games that I want to enjoy more than the games being challenging or not challenging enough. That's kind of like where I'm going to put a button on this episode, unless you guys have some final thoughts.
I think the one thing I would add is I like that games are giving us the choice to change the difficulty mid-game. Because it used to be you picked the difficulty at the beginning and then you were stuck with it. And if you got halfway through and it was too hard, you were kind of stuck. You had to go back, you know, restart the whole thing potentially. Now, at any point, I can go into the menu in most games and say, okay, I need to go down to easy for this one boss because he's just kicking my ass and I'm sick of it. And then I can get back to the game and get to the fun part that I enjoy. And I really, really appreciate that feature.
Yeah, for sure. And I can definitely appreciate that as well, because it's like, you know, you find yourself being a little too challenged in a category. Maybe you need to work on, you know, how to do a certain thing more before you can come back and do it on a harder difficulty. And I appreciate that more and more games are giving you that choice now. It's good.
Well, it sparks one last thought, which is, I don't like games that increase the difficulty by just throwing more health on the enemies. I love games that increase the difficulty by adding game mechanics that are more advanced, because it gives me a reason to come back and play the harder difficulty to master the advanced version of the game. I can't think of a really straightforward example of this. Maybe Tokyo Mirage Sessions FE Encore had some of that, where the new game plus added a couple of game mechanics, and a couple of the other JRPGs do it. But I find that so much more interesting and gives the game replay value versus just, oh, this guy has 50% more health now because I'm playing on hard. So, yeah, I just something to call out, I thought.
For sure. Well, I think that's going to about wrap it up for this episode. Be sure to head on over to our Discord server for all these conversations and more at discord.otherworlds.gg, where we do community game nights, other gaming-related things there, and have a lot of fun. And, yeah, this has been episode number 61. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeehaw!